Hi, I'm Pete. Grateful member of Al-Anon Family Groups, and my home group is the Thursday night Corona Del Mar, California Men's Stag. And I thank my posse down here. I feel like I'm in California with all my friends here. My wife and my buddy Dwayne's here. And see, I did it. And this is cool because this is about almost the size of a panel. So it's like in an HI in an institution. So I feel pretty comfortable up here doing this. My first international, so I'm really pumped about that. And I'll tell you right up front, I love AA and Al-Anon Recovery. It's like the greatest thing going. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And I tell you, if it wasn't for Al-Anon, my wife and I wouldn't be sitting here today. We wouldn't be married. I don't think there's any question about that. And where to get going here? You know, I was trying to sleep last night. I was trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to get this thing going? But once I get going, it's really tough to get me to shut up. So it's just a matter of getting going here. I like today's pages. You know, I find that I was here yesterday morning, and a lot of people were talking about the literature, and for me, the literature, too, is the key. I mean, we get a lot of solutions in that literature. I read those books every day, come rain or shine. And today's page, one of them, I learned a lot of things from my wife. I'm going to give her a lot of credit here today. One thing that she taught me is at the top of each page is to write the topic. You know, go to the back of the page, find out the topic for that day, and put it. So today I know that one pager is on Tradition 3. And even though I come from a Med and Stag, Tradition 3 says that there's no such thing as a closed meeting to anyone who's an Al-Anon. So if any ladies want to show up at our Men's Stag, fine. You know, I'm not too keen about showing up at a Women's Stag, but, you know, whatever. So, and the other page was on faith and one day at a time. And I don't talk about God a lot. In fact, I could probably go an hour without talking about God, but it doesn't mean I didn't hit my knees this morning, and it doesn't mean I'm not going to hit my knees tonight, and all my decisions are based on, you know, him being there, him, her, it being there. I work a pragmatic Al-Anon program. And I was reading out of my Kindle the other day and in a murder mystery that I really like murder mysteries, and pragmatic was there. So the nice thing about Kindle is you just hold your button down and it shows you what the definition is. And it's like a realistic view, or, you know, what's going on in the real world. And that's the way I like to work my program and talk about my program, because I think God helped create this program, but he's given us the tools to do with it on a day-to-day basis, like detachment and the literature and sponsorship and meetings and all these things that we can actually use. Because I think he expects me to get out there and do the footwork and not just to get on my knees and then just sit in a chair and wait for things to happen. And like a lot of us, you know, I came in here because of, for me, it was because of a 15-year-old. And the sign out there, it could say parent, grandparent, and step-parent, because that's what I am. I'm a step-parent. And out there, I may refer to him as my son, but in here, I refer to him as my stepson, because there may be other step-parents here, and, you know, there's that identity that you might be sitting there thinking, I wish I could hear from a step-parent. So here I am. I met my wife, I met my stepson when he was about 7, and by 15 we were in a rehab. And you know all the ups and downs that go with that. And we came home one night, it was a Friday night, and we found a note on the kitchen table that said, he's 15, he says, I need some space. And so and on the note it said something like, I need some space, I'm leaving, and I'll call you when I want to come home, or I'll let you know where I am. You know, our literature talks about that phone call that comes at inconvenient hours. So we got a phone call about 3 o'clock and someday, you know, Thursday morning, about a week later, come down to the local police station and pick up your kid. And so we did. And one of the tools that I just absolutely love to use logic and pie charts. I've used pie charts to try to cure alcoholism. And when that didn't work, then I would try something else. And so we're sitting there in the police station, and the guy with the uniform and the badge, he's lecturing the 15-year-old about, you know, this is where your life is going, all this kind of stuff. And we thought, I'm thinking, yes, this is it. This is someone with authority. Of course, it had, you know, made no impression on him. But what did make an impression on him was that he had been arrested for breaking and entering into a commercial business, or attempting to. And that was the alcoholic brain. You know, we're going to break in, get a bunch of cigars and cigarettes and hit the road and sell them along the way for gas money and stuff like that. And so we go down, and as a step-parent, sometimes we didn't see eye to eye. And that may also be true between two parents. But we did not see eye to eye in quite a few things. But this, on this issue, we did. And we decided that before he was going to come home at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning after we picked him up at the police station, is we're going to ask him, what does he want? And if he doesn't want any sobriety or recovery or anything like that, we're going to leave him on the street. So instead of going from point A to point B, I went from point A to point C to D to E, and try to, you know, so we can get this lecture, this, you know, question in. And we asked him, what would you like when you get home? And it was a shower, some food, and go to sleep. And at that point, I pulled the car over to the curb and said, you know, that's not what we had in mind. So when you want to find some help, you know, give us a call. And my wife has said that if she was driving, we may not have made it to the curb. But being a stepdad, I did pull over. And I can tell you that I think having that relationship, that step-parent and the parent, was really a good formula, because I had as much detachment as you could possibly have. And she had about as much compassion as you could possibly have. And what we needed to do is try to work the compassion with the detachment. And I needed to go to her side, and she needed to come over to my side. And it's really worked out well. And once we got into Al-Anon, I never heard from my wife, you cannot talk to my son that way. And I never said to her, you better fix this thing or I'm out of here. You know, to deal with alcoholism, it takes a joint effort. And even if it's a single parent, we still have sponsors, we still have other Al-Anon members to talk to. And you can be united with yourself, you know, to make these decisions. And, you know, the things, you know, and so where I was talking to some guys before the meeting, Bill right there, and he was asking me if I go to the parent meeting. And in Orange County, California, we have several parent meetings. And I've tried parent meetings, but I like just mixed meetings. The first meeting I ever went into was literally, and a minimum size, it was 75 women and me. And if there was anything, it was probably a higher number than that. So I learned the beginning of my program, I learned from women who were married to alcoholics, and I talked to husbands who were married to alcoholics and people who grew up with alcoholism and parents of alcoholics. But I like just general meetings. I'm not a big fan of focus meetings, because occasionally a focus meeting can turn into that focus. It could be like it's a parent meeting with an Al-Anon focus rather than an Al-Anon meeting with a parent focus. And so that's just my take. You know, I just like general meetings. And I go to a men's meeting. I might be talking about from both sides of my mouth, but I go to a men's meeting because, as you know, Al-Anon is about 86% women. And I'm not going to find a male sponsor in a meeting with 75 women. So I needed to get out there and, you know, mix it up with some guys. So we picked him up, left him off. About a week later, he was ready. Took him to the rehab. And that's where they introduced him to AA and NA. And that's where they introduced us to Al-Anon. And this is something that we agreed on again. We don't need Al-Anon. These people have diplomas. We're writing them checks. This is going to be like he's got a cold or something, you know, a flu. They're going to go in and fix him and send him home. He's going to be an ex-alcoholic and slash addict. And we'll be happy, joyous, and free. without all of the sacrifice that it takes to getting the meetings. Well, that doesn't really happen that way. What happened was, is he did get sober, and he was working a hell of a good program, but it was his sober appearance and his sober behavior that drove us into Al-Anon. He has naturally blonde hair. He came home with black hair, spiked hair, shaved black hair with red flames. He did a Dennis Rodman with the brown hair with leopard spots. And he came home one night, this is just the way I remember it, with black leather bondage pants, which is, you know, you got a chain going from one leg to the other, so you can only walk about 6 inches at a time, clank. He's walking around the house, clank, clank, clank. And that's like, okay, I surrender. So we may have gone to an Al-Anon meeting that night, I don't know, but it was shortly thereafter that we started going to Al-Anon. And the wife, she just caught on. I mean, she was just like working up like crazy. And as a guy, I don't know if it's a guy thing, but I still figured I don't need this thing. So it took me another 6 or 7 months to get a sponsor. I was going to one meeting a week just to keep the heat off. You know, if I didn't go to that one meeting a week, even though she didn't say you can't talk to my son that way, she might say, well, if you were serious about his recovery, you'd be going to an Al-Anon meeting. So I went to one meeting a week. It was 3 miles from our home, and we took 2 cars because she wants to get there early and talk and stay after and talk. I want to be the last person in the meeting and the first person out of the meeting. And I'm just going to do my duty and hit the road. So I did that, but the problem was they were awesome examples of sobriety and working an Al-Anon program. The alcoholic was staying sober. She was working a great program, and I was the one left in the dust. Got a sponsor, started working the program, and things started to happen. Now, I'm going to start talking about some of the tools and solutions that worked in our family. And I can tell you that the tools and solutions that worked in our family with the son are the same tools and solutions that work if you're married to an alcoholic. It's the same problem. It's the same solution. I was listening to the guys last night. It was my first international. Like I said, I was listening to those 3 speakers, and they all said the same thing. The problem is alcoholism. And the alcoholic is not the enemy here. It's alcoholism. And so whether it's a son, a daughter, a husband, or a wife, there is no detachment for children in a separate pamphlet for detachment with husbands and, you know, it's the same thing, and that's why I generally like general meetings. The first mistake that I found I was doing is I was breaking his anonymity. We have rehab on Mondays, and we had rehab on Thursdays. And so what I would do on Tuesdays and Fridays is I would go to work and complain about, if this kid wasn't an alcoholic, I wouldn't have to go to the rehab on Monday nights and Thursday nights. So I'm at work telling everyone at work, and he knows the people at my work, that he's an alcoholic. Well, your opinion of alcoholism was probably mine before I got here, is that they're weak-kneed, weak-willed, and if they only got their act together, they'd get sober and stay sober. No idea that it was a disease and it was something that they didn't want and it's something that has no cure. It's a progressive disease. And so I had to learn to keep my mouth shut. And when we would go to the dental appointments and the doctor's appointments, he would be the one to tell the dentist and the doctor that he has an issue with alcoholism and addiction. So I needed him to carry his own weight. And the thing about, I love anonymity in the 12th tradition. Anonymity, yes, it's, I'm not going to talk about who's here when I go home and who's there and all that kind of stuff. But anonymity is really, in my opinion, about humility and protecting my own anonymity. Meaning that, you know, we have that bookmark, do something good today, do good 3 good things today and try not to get found out. Well, there's a really good page, it's in the ODAT, June 5th, that talks about anonymity in a roundabout way. And one of the reasons I might have been out there breaking his anonymity is playing the martyr card. I have this problem. Pay some attention to me. I'm hurting. And I grew up around a lot of heavy drinking, and I was always looking for some attention because everyone had something else going on. And so by using him, it's a sick way of getting some attention, is basically what it is. And so I had to start protecting my own anonymity in that sense. It says in that page, it says, it takes courage not to look courageous. We all got stuff going on, you know. Even people out there who are not in this program have stuff going on. But we learn how to deal with it in Al-Anon, in our own, you know, family of, you know, recovery here. Another tool was having some unity and some consistency. And there's nothing alcoholism loves better than inconsistency. You know, when he was a 15-year-old, I loved coming up with consequences. If you did anything, I would come up with a consequence, no matter what it was. And it could have been a crazy consequence, but the problem was I'd come up with this consequence that say, okay, no money for 30 days, or you're grounded for a week, or whatever. Well, after 2 days, I'm feeling really guilty about this consequence. And so I break in the consequence. And what all that does is telling the alcoholic is, don't believe everything Pete tells you. Because in about a day or two, he's going to change his mind. And that was true. So I had to come up with some consistency. I had to come up with some consequences that I could stick with and not just throw them out, at a whim. Unity in the house was very important because before Al-Anon, I'm going to use the word alcoholism knows who's weak. And alcoholism knows who to call for money. Alcoholism knows who to call for favors. Alcoholism knows who to call to get the car payment made. And so, you know, he's calling me, you know, I need money for this, I need money for that, and I would give him the money. And one of the things that we did as a couple is the first 7 to 10 years, I'm going to say it was about 7 to 10 years, we went to 3 Al-Anon meetings a week and 3 AA meetings a week. And I loved that. I mean, I am so grateful that I went to all those AA meetings because I got to know the alcoholics. And it's the same guys every meeting I would talk to. And I would hear guys at the newcomers up at the podium saying, I couldn't get so sober until my parents got out of the way. And I would talk to the guys at the meeting and I would say, you know, where's that newcomer that was here? You know, Mark, he was doing so well. He's been here for like 2 months. And the sponsor would say, well, mom and dad called. And they said, all is forgiven. And we never saw him again. Now, that doesn't mean he wasn't going to AA somewhere, but I never saw him again. Sometimes the non-alcoholic can be the greatest obstacle to long-term sobriety. I make promises and I break promises. So getting back to unity is today, it's many years later, but the solution for us is when he calls, I got 5 minutes about. Okay. When he calls, this is what he hears. I will talk to Pam, my wife, and we will get back to you. He could say, because his emergency is no longer our emergency. He could say, my car will be repossessed tomorrow. The formula remains the same. And this is where it comes up with consistency and unity. He knows I will talk to my sponsor. He knows she will talk to her sponsor. Then we will get back together again and we will talk about what our answer will be together as a couple. And then sometimes one of us has to draw a straw to call him. Al-Anon, the purpose of Al-Anon isn't to punish alcoholics. So it's not always no. Sometimes it can be a yes. And that's easy making that phone call. But when you say no, when you say no, we're taking you off of your health insurance. You know, when you have to make a phone call like that, sometimes she's stronger than I am. And sometimes, in some cases, I'm stronger than her than she is. And so it was working together. That's what kept us married. And we're very happily married as far as I'm concerned. I have the microphone. You get a voice later. But this is the thing I've been waiting for my entire life. It took me 40 years to get married. I didn't have the guts to get married. I didn't have the guts to have kids. I've got this thing going on. Alcoholism was running into the ground. And I didn't want to go down with a fight. And alcoholic has several times said, thank you, Pete, for hanging around and not hitting the road. It's been really a pleasure. And I've gone into juvenile court with him. And, you know, I have a more flexible schedule than Pam. And so I got court duty. And, you know, I've sat in the courtroom and the prosecutor is saying, you know, he's not doing this and not doing that. And the public defender is saying, yes, but he's doing these things well. And the commissioner, the judge says, surprised the hell out of me. He says, okay, what do you have to say? And I'm just a stepdad. You know, I'm just basically a taxi service. And so what I learned is that I agreed with what the prosecutor said, but I also agreed with what the public defender said. And so I said, I agree with both people. And so he brought down the gavel and said, okay, 30 days. They put him in handcuffs and he walked out the courtroom. But as is on his way out, he said, Pete, I love you. And that's Al-Anon and AA working. And he knew he was getting locked up because of things he was doing or not doing. Had nothing to do with us. Not at all. You know, luckily, we don't judge our Al-Anon programs by the sobriety of the alcoholic, because he spent a lot of years out doing the deal. And at 30... just a few years ago, he tried to get sober one more time. Not a good idea to do it by yourself. DTs, convulsions, fell, broke part of his spine, ended up in the intensive care. And it was rough sitting there watching him tied down, detoxing in bed. The smell, it drove me out of the room. I'm not ashamed of that. But we hung in there. We had a lot of Al-Anon friends to help us out. And he's sober today, as far as I know. He never finished high school, but at 31 he got his GED because it was important to him. To him, not to us. He never graduated high school. He's taken some college courses because it's important to him. And he's sober today, I hope, because it's important to him. And, you know, I can love him either way, but I much more, you know, prefer that he's sober. And, you know, again, I love this program. I love AA. I think alcoholics are wonderful people, too. You know, this sounded like such a good idea 2 months ago when I filled out that survey. I don't know if anybody got the survey. I didn't know I'd be standing up here. But, you know, today I get to participate. I've been an isolator my entire life. And it's those lies that we tell ourselves that we're not good enough. And after a few years, we start believing it. But when you sign up to do some service, whether it's washing coffee cups or standing up in front of at a podium, you find out that was all BS. You know, we're all worth it. We're all worthy. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their convention. So thank you.
That was excellent, Pete. Thank you for sharing your story. And now we'll have Maddie.
Good morning. My name is Maddie Thomas, and I'm a member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon with Alateen Participation. And it's so good to see you all this morning. I've been in this program since January 19, 1992. And when I came to this program in 1992, it wasn't my first spill with Al-Anon. I came around the program in 1986. But when I came back in 1992, I came for me. Because, see, I already knew it wasn't about him anymore, but I need to come for me. So when I came to Al-Anon, I thought it was about spouses being able to live with their loved ones and so forth. And when I would go into the rooms, I would see parents come in there, young parents, older parents, and so forth, and they would talk about their children. Well, in our book, Alan and I worked for family and loved ones of alcoholics, it says, and this is my favorite part, this is how I know that parents and grandparents are welcome, because in our book, it tells me so. And on page 5 in How Al-Anon Works for Families and Friends of Alcoholics, it says, none of us come to Al-Anon because our lives resemble the happily ever after of fairy tales. I know mine didn't. We come to Al-Anon because we are grappling with an assortment of problems. We hope to find some answers, but doubt that there is any hope to be found anywhere. Other people's stories seem so different from ours that we may not recognize that we are having anything in common with one another. But whether we realize it or not, there is a common thread. Each of us has been affected by someone else's drinking. And that's true, because for me, when I came, it was all about my husband's drinking and my behavior. And as the parents and grandparents came into those rooms, we would read the supplemental do's and don'ts for parents of alcoholics. And it would tell them to do take the tough love attitude and do form a united front and do keep an adult attitude, deal with the facts and not the emotions. Well, how do you deal with the facts and just not emotions when it's your children? And I used to always tell them, my son says he's not an alcoholic. My son says he doesn't do drugs. But his behavior says otherwise. But I can call him an alcoholic or anything of that nature. So I could only empathize with the parents and grandparents who would come into those rooms. However, one day, my husband, and that's my husband over there, CT, he helped my son get a job with the railroad. And I was so excited because that's a good job. You know, hey, my son got a job with the railroad. I'm excited. I'm happy. And he passed all the tests. And then he goes away for his 15-day training. On day 15, he calls his dad and he tells him, well, I got good news. I passed my test. But see, what they did that day, they did a random drug test. And he failed that test. And he had to call home and tell his dad he failed that test. And when his dad shared that information with me, I was so glad I had my Al-Anon family to go back to and share that information with. As a parent, did it hurt? You darn tootin' it hurt. But thank God I had those rooms and I had my Al-Anon family to go to, because see, they helped and they understood that pain that I was going through. Now, I had been into the program a long time, but did it lessen the pain with the realization, yes, my son is an alcoholic, yes, my son, but has he acknowledged those facts even today? No, he hasn't. But see, that's okay. In the Al-Anon do's and don'ts for parents of alcoholics, it also says do form a united front. And I have to tell you, my husband's not an Al-Anon. He's an alcoholic. He didn't talk to me when he invited my son to come live with us. Now, did I get a resentment? You darn tootin'. I got a resentment about that. He'd have moved him into my house. And I used to stand up there and tell people, oh, I don't want my son ever living with me. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I don't want him living with me. You know, CT told me a couple of weeks ago, he said, I want to tell you a joke. I says, what's the joke? He says, a judge said, he know why senior citizens go to jail. And I says, why do senior citizens go to jail, CT? He says, because they wake up one morning, realize that their adult children are living with them, and they just start shooting. Bang, bang, bang. You know, I can relate to that. Because in this program, as long as I'm on this side of the dirt, I'm going to have some of those thoughts. That's all there is to it. So as I continue to work my program, now it's harder working the program with my son. Because, see, that's my baby. That's my firstborn. I had big dreams, big hopes, big aspirations for this firstborn of mine. Did he disappoint me? Yes, he did. But see, I had to come to the realization that that's not my disappointment to have. That's his life. And I had to let him know that that's your life. Now, he says I'm in a cult. And I tell him, you better be thankful I'm in this cult. Because this cult is what's letting me accept the fact, and that's what I like about this program. It tells me I have to learn to accept things that I don't really like, but be okay with it. And I'm okay with the fact that my husband made that decision. Now, did I tell him about it? Oh, yeah. He definitely heard. See, I'm Al-Anon. I know I can't control anything, but I've learned the tools of communication today. So I communicate with my son what my boundaries are. And that was one of the things I had to learn to set was boundaries. Because prior to realizing that he was an alcoholic addict, and he's going to hear this story, and it's not something that he hasn't heard before, even though he says it's not. I'm not supposed to call him one, but I can do it for today. You know, it's okay. Because that's how I feel today, because I see it. And until he comes to the realization, you know, he has serious health issues. My fear is that one day I'll go upstairs and he won't be breathing. That's my fear. But see, that's in God's hands. And I have a God today, and I call my God, hallelujah. I'm thankful because of my God, I'm able to accept a lot of things today because see, in my family, there's alcoholics all around us. I just didn't grow up in it because my mom was not. Now, what I did grow up in is rageaholic, you know. I know that very well. You know, a friend of ours in the program, he says, recovery's funny, but it ain't no joke. It is funny. No, it's not a joke. They say this is a very easy program. And it's a program for people who want it. See, when I came into these rooms in 1992, I wanted this program. I needed this program. And what it did was it helped save my marriage. Because, see, my husband was sober. And I only was around Al-Anon. So I had to get some new tools. And my son and my daughter. Now, my daughter, she loves this program. She loves it because she grew up in Al-Anon. My son didn't want this program. But my daughter uses this program today of Al-Anon. And she's able to share it with her friends. I remember when she called me. She was at Tulane. And she called me from Tulane, and she says, Mom, can you send me my Al-Anon books? I says, okay, you know, Spendo's 30 plus years age. And, but I sent them to her. And when she came to visit, she shared with us about a friend of hers, and her friend says, and she took a friend to an Al-Anon meeting. She asked her, Hatice, how you know about this? Are you an alcoholic? She says, no, but my dad is. I grew up in it. My son didn't want a part of this program. Nothing. He made fun of it. See, his dad, and it's his stepdad, but he calls him his dad because that's what he is. He met my son when he was 7 years of age, and my son fell in love with that man. When I couldn't stand him, I said, oh, no, I don't want him. So let me tell you, if there's any single people out there, or if you have some young people who's getting married and they go to a baby shower, tell him, watch out for the men who show up at the baby shower, because that's where I met him at. And my son says, I like CT. I says, I don't. And they formed a relationship, and sure enough, a year and a half later, CT and I was married, and my son was so happy. And that became his pops. And through all the chaos that my son has been through, that man has been there for him. So that's his dad. And he probably calls him his dad, whether he's sober that day or we call him a Zaza. When we look at him and says, oh, Zaza's out today. That's his dad. And he loves that man, and that man loves my son. So when the parents come in the rooms today, I can sympathize with them, but you know what I can do most important? I can share hope that they would be okay, whether their sons or daughters get sober or not. Because, see, it's not about them anymore. It becomes about me. I've learned to set my boundaries. I've learned to say no in a loving way. I had to learn how to say no because I used to say, yes, Mr. Hell no. Now I just smile and say, no. Why? Because I don't want to. I can say it just like that. And they understand that even better because I'm smiling. And they don't know what's behind that smile. So the parents had come to the room and they share about their children doing this and their children doing that and how they don't have their lives. I tell my sis, you know, you got to take the focus off of them and start doing some things for yourself. What have you done for yourself lately? I would ask them. Well, I don't have any money because I had to help them pay the light bill. I had to help them pay the car note. I had to help them pay for daycare. I say, that's understandable. I say, but for me today, my priority, my first priority is to thank God because he woke me up this morning. I say, my second priority is to do something good for me. I said, and everything else, if there's anything left over, I can share it. But me first. I've learned to, and you know, sometimes I'm in this program and I'm still on this side of the dirt. And sometimes I do worry about my son because that's my baby. And even though he's not a baby, and let me tell you, my son is 44 years old. But I don't care if he was 54 years old. He's still my child. And I would still be concerned about it. The thing about today is how I love him today. My love for him today is much different from when he was a baby. I don't have to nurture him anymore. I can be there to lend an ear so he can hear me, so I can hear him when he shares with me his pain. Because, see, I understand, his wife died a couple of years ago of breast cancer. So I understand him dealing with that pain. I have to tell you, I think I had the best daughter-in-law God could ever give a mother-in-law. She was wonderful. So I understand that he's still dealing with that pain. But like I told him, he can't grieve forever, baby. So I can be there, the mother, to listen to him and to hold his hand. And when he cried, just, you know, tell him, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So when parents come in those rooms, my gift for them is hope that they will be okay too. Again, recovery is funny, but it ain't no joke. It's serious. But you know, I've got that joy. I've learned how to redirect my thinking and my thoughts, because in our program it says do play, find recreation and find hobbies. So I have to go back to some of the things that I love, so I won't focus so much on my son. And what I love to do, I love to bake. I love to read a good book. Yeah, I read the Bible and I read a lot of Al-Anon books, but I like to read some good spicy books. Yeah, I read all three chapters, all three books of 50 Shades of Grey. Let me tell you, it's hot. And I enjoyed all of it, okay? And when I can't sleep late at night, they say that's God trying to get my attention so he can talk to me and I can listen. So one night a couple of months ago, I couldn't sleep and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I love music too. So I got up and it was 12 midnight. And I got up out of the bed, I hit the radio, because I keep up the CD player, and I keep a CD in there. I love Randy Crawford. And I listened to her sing, and I got in the kitchen, and when I finished, I posted this beautiful cake. It's called an almond upside down cake. Awesome, beautiful, and let me tell you, it was good too. And I posted a picture of it, and I says, when you can't sleep, and things are going on, redirect your thoughts. Get up and do something to change that thought pattern. I did. And when I went to bed, I was okay. Because I listened to my music. Because, see, Randy Crawford, she sings to the heart. And when I finished baking and finished listening to her, I was okay. And I was able to get in that bed and go to sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, refreshed. And when I wake up in the morning, I say, thank you, God. Thank you, God, for another day. That's always my first thought. So I tell parents, when you can't sleep and you think you got a whole lot and you know you just got so much going, redirect your thoughts. Find what you love and do it. Don't make your child your first priority. I'm glad I'm in these rooms. Why do I stay? I stay in these rooms because when that new person walks through that door, I want to greet them with a smile. I want to tell them, welcome, you're in the right place. Whether you're a parent, grandparent, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, niece, nephew, Eleanor welcomes everybody. Thank you, and I'm glad I'm here.
We have had two powerful speakers. You want to get up and stretch just for a second? Oh, and breathe. We have one more, so don't leave. Okay. All right. While you're stretching, if somebody has got one earring that they're looking for, it was left at the door. Okay. You can sit down now. We're through stretching. Okay. Lisa, we'd like one more. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lisa, and I'm grateful to be a member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. I am from the great state of Oklahoma, where I'm currently serving as delegate. And my home group is a Choctaw Into Action Al-Anon group. And I'll be celebrating on the 25th of this month, I'll be celebrating 30 years. First of all, I'd kind of like to give you a little history of what got me into Al-Anon. I came into Al-Anon thinking that I didn't have a problem, that, you know, it's not like I didn't have any alcoholism in my family. My father died from the disease when I was 6 years old. And I have members of my family that belongs in one of these rooms, either this room or the one on the other side. And but they haven't realized yet that that's where they belong. And they're not ready to get any kind of help. And so I'm just hoping that maybe by me being in the program and being an example, it will get them to the point to where they'll want this program too. And I've been married to several alcoholics, the last two recovering members of AA, but most of my alcoholics have deceased now, and so my husband today is kind of shaking in his boots about now. Because he's saying, oh, my God, I'm the only surviving husband. And he's, I don't know if I want to go this route or not, you know. You know, when I was thinking about the Al-Anon welcomes the parents and grandparents of alcoholics, I thought, wow, how did I get this topic, you know. But, you know, the dynamics of the family situation has changed so much that, you know, there's so many grandparents out there that's having to take over being the parent after, you know, they've been in the program for quite a while. They've had to take over that role. And I know for myself, my son is an alcoholic addict, and We see quite a bit of it in our meetings also, alcoholic addicts, and we see the parents raising, you know, their grandchildren and everything else. And for me, the principles still apply, the principles of the program, what Al-Anon has taught me. I know my son keeps me in this program, and my husband definitely keeps me in this program, and because we all have the effects of alcoholism in our lives. But through the 12-step sponsoring, literature, and experience in the God of my understanding, you know, this program has saved my life in so many ways. There have been points in my life where I felt like, you know, that I was really being tested under a lot of different areas. You know, the recent thing has been with my son. I kind of have been watching him and thinking, if he continues this lifestyle, you know, things are not going to get any easier or any better for him, and he's going to end up in one of these rooms. I just don't know which one it is, you know. And unfortunately, it came to pass that it was he should be in, you know, with the AAs or some kind of addiction counseling. You know, as for myself, I came into Al-Anon and I was thinking, you know, I really don't know what to expect from this program. I really don't know what it can do for me, you know. But really what it's done for me is given me a life, you know. I went through a lot of stress growing up and living with an alcoholic and alcoholic father, and living with a lot of people in my lives that they were just out of the woodwork, it seemed like, in my family. And so when I came in this program, I expected someone to give me a list of what I should do and what I shouldn't do. You know, I wanted somebody to put it down in writing because, you know, I had tried everything under the sun to try to figure out what to do about this. I have tried everything. If there wasn't anything I tried, you tell me and I'll try it. And, you know, it's bound to work. And I didn't think my life was unmanageable. The alcoholics was, but mine wasn't, you know. And I didn't realize how much effect it did have on the family and members of alcoholics. I'd be lying if, you know, if my sponsor didn't help me get through a lot of areas in my life that, you know, were outside the realm of what the primary purpose in Al-Anon is. And but, you know, we kind of look to our sponsorship for guidance and support and everything. And sometimes I listen, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I take their advice, sometimes I don't, you know. But I try to do what works best for me in my life today. And with the principles in mind, you know, there's just so much this program has to offer, you know, if you're dealing or living with an alcoholic, peace of mind is the main thing for me, you know. My mind was so rattled and I couldn't make decisions. I couldn't do anything when I first came in, and it was very difficult for me to even focus on anything to keep my mind from being in a squirrel cage. And so loving suggestions, you know, from my sponsor and from the members of the Al-Anon groups has helped me in that arena. But some of the, when I was thinking about this, some of the dilemmas that I was thinking about that have kind of come into play has been the delusion that I thought better parenting would prevent the problem. You know, I thought if I was a better parent, if I could do everything just perfect and everything just right, then there would be no problem of alcoholism in my home. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And I always felt like my son was an extension of me and that he should live by my standards, my morals, and my convictions. Also that he was a reflection of me, you know, because nothing embarrassed me any more than someone coming and telling me, you know, that my son did this and my son did that, or that an alcoholic in my life did this or did that, you know, and because I thought it had an, you know, a reflection of me. But I have to kind of remember that he still had choices. He had all kinds of choices. He is the one that made the decisions, you know. Unless I literally forced alcohol or drugs in him physically, you know, his actions was his decisions. My actions was a reflection of me. And another thing that I try to think about when I was looking at this topic is the blame. You know, I was always trying to find the cause for blame. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? You know, and the only reason I wanted to know is because I wanted to figure out a way to fix it. You know, if I could figure out a way to fix it, this would no longer be a problem. The 3 C's of Al-Anon was a big help to me, you know. I didn't cause the alcoholism. I didn't control it. I can't control it, and I can't cure it, but I can contribute to it. And I did a lot of that because I didn't know anything else to do, you know. I think the husband that got me into this program, he had gone through 13 treatment centers, and by that point, I was out of ideas, I was out of help, I was hopeless, and I felt like there was just no answers anywhere. That if it was out there, I would have found it by now, and I would know what to do. But, you know, coming into Al-Anon was not my answer. My answer was if I had the knowledge, you know, if I had the knowledge, then everything would be okay, you know, but problem is, my knowledge got me here. You know, my resources got me here. And because of that, things didn't get much better for me. And learning that I have to allow them consequences of their own actions. You know, my son, he's not been a problem for me up until lately. We've kind of just not been close or anything. When his dad and I split up, he went, the only way that I could get out of that relationship was to leave him there with his dad. Now, when it comes to this blame thing, he was thinking that he grew up thinking that it was that I didn't care for him, that if you know, if I had cared for him, I wouldn't leave him there with his dad. But the truth is, I left him there because I knew the shape that I was in, I couldn't be of no help to him for the shape that I was in. I couldn't even think straight. I couldn't focus. I couldn't function. You know, and even making the simplest decision was almost next to impossible for me, you know. And when I got in the program, I was just shaking like a leaf. I was shaking so much from inside out that, you know, I couldn't hardly sit still in a chair when I first got in there, you know, because my life was so unmeasurable and I'd gone through so much hurt, so much pain, so much promises, you know. The alcoholic would always promise me all kinds of things, and they'd never come true, and I always wanted to believe him, and then I'd back up from him, and what would happen would be that, you know, he'd go right out again and say, I want to do this, and I kept thinking, well, you know, it's all willpower. You know, if he wanted to quit, he could, and it wouldn't be a problem, but that's I have found out since being in this program that that wasn't the case, you know, that it is a disease, and that he is where he is, and he's doing what alcoholics do, and that's drink. And trying to relate that to my son is totally different, though. You know, I'm his mother, you know, and I want to protect him. You know, I don't want him to have to suffer the blows that I had to suffer, you know, when I was growing up. And I want things to be easier for him. And so I did a lot of things in that arena that I know I shouldn't have done. You know, and he really didn't have to answer for anything. And it wasn't until he called me midnight one night. That's never a good sign. You know, when you get a telephone call at midnight, 1 o'clock, "Hi, Mom, I'm in jail," you know. I said, "Okay, and you're in jail for?" He says, "They say that I was in jail for drugs and selling drugs." And I said, and he says, "But really, I was just running around with people, and I was at the wrong place at the wrong time." You know, but I'm no idiot. You know, I've been seeing the signs. I've been seeing the change in behavior. I've been seeing the way he is. You know, there were times that he didn't even call me for, I could say, 3 months at a time or more. And I figured it's because he didn't want me to know what's going on with him. He thought if he didn't have to talk to me, he didn't have to tell me anything. I never asked him for anything. I never asked him to tell me anything. I always tried to leave that communication door open, you know, so that he could communicate when he felt like it and if he felt like it. You know, and I even told him one time after his dad died, I said, "You know, if you don't want to talk to me, that's fine. You know, talk to somebody. Talk to a friend. Talk to somebody about these feelings." I said, "Believe me, I know what it's like to keep those feelings inside and not to be able to let those out." And I said, "It'll eat you alive." And I said, "You know, you're just not going to be able to continue doing what you're doing unless you get some of that out." And so because of this program, I've been able to give him a lot of good information. You know, we have a lot of tools in this program to use, but communication between me and him just was not there. And I didn't know how to improve that. So what I kept doing was that I just kept praying for him and turning him over to God. I had to turn him over sometimes 3 times a day because every time I talked to him on the phone, I could tell he was doing something, you know, and that kept me upset and that kept my life in turmoil. And so I had to learn to let go of that and turn it over to God and say, "Okay, God, this is yours. There's nothing I can do about this. You know, it's up to you. You know, you're going to have to help him because I can't," you know. And so I had told him that once he got into jail that, you know, I would give him one get out of jail free card, you know. And I did follow that, but I waited 7 days to do it. I let him sit in there for 7 days, and he was telling me, every night he would call me, telling me how he's sleeping on the floor, how he's doing this, and I said, "I'm sorry, son," I said, "but sometimes we don't make good choices, you know, and sometimes we have to suffer the consequences of those actions, and I'm sorry that you're having to do, but I hope that this is a learning experience for you, that maybe you can turn your life around and change some of your behaviors." After that happened, he was able to get out of jail, and he did change. He started, he changed his friends, and he changed who he was running around with, and he changed his work, because at work he was a blackjack dealer at a casino, so that was not exactly the best place to stay clean and sober. And so he stayed there. He changed all that, you know. And when he was growing up, he did go to Alateen for about 3 years. I was in the program, and I was doing some Alateen sponsoring. So he did go to Alateen for about 3 years, but he didn't stay in it. Once he got a little bit older, he decided that, you know, this program wasn't for him. And I didn't push it because I told him, I said, "You know, if you want it, you know where it's at." And that's kind of way this whole program has been. If you know where it is, because it's not for people that need it. It's for people that want it. And, you know, he wasn't ready for it yet. And I have to think about that because, you know, when I was first came in this program, it took me 10 years from the first time I went into an Al-Anon meeting to get to the point where I wanted to come back and actually wanted to do something about it. I didn't have no problems. I was living with three active alcoholics at the same time at that particular time, but I think I thought I had the answers. And so I wanted to go long enough to kind of find out what it is for y'all to tell me what to do, and then I could go home and apply it and everything would be okay. Well, like I said before, that didn't happen. But I finally did get in here, so I know that by being an example is the best thing that I can do for him, by letting him know that there is a place for him to go if and when he is ready for help, and that he doesn't have to live his life that way, that he doesn't have to suffer from the effects from the disease, that there is hope for him. Because I know for me, I was feeling hopeless, helpless, and everything else that when I came in here, and my life was out of control. And so I try to talk to him about things like that I know about. You know, my whole life was centered around the alcoholic, and everything I thought, felt, and did was centered around that person. And so the thing that I'm doing different with my son is I'm allowing him to be who he is, whether that's sick or whether that's wherever he is at that particular time. And believe it or not, our communication has improved. And I used to never hear from him for Mother's Day, and I wouldn't hear from him for who knows when. And then he wouldn't say very much at all, and it's like he expected me to jump on him, you know, about stuff. And that's not the way that I was. I just kept being loving and told him that I loved him and cared about him and that, you know, I would sure like to hear from him once in a while. If he would just pick up the phone and just say, you know, hey, Mom, I'm okay, I love you. If he would just say that, everything would be okay. You know, I feel much better, and I would know that he's okay. You know, but he never did that, and no matter how much I ask him, he didn't do that. And so I finally decided, oh, well, it's not going to happen. So, but these days, he's calling me a lot. He, just over Father's Day, he was up here, and he's actually got to start spending time with his daughter. Because this happened maybe 3 or 4 months ago, so this whole son thing, you know, of him being in jail and everything, it's all kind of new, you know. That arena's new. The disease is not new, though. You know, the disease is live and active. And I often had a lot of fears, you know. 5 minutes. I had a lot of fears. I was always afraid, you know, and I think a lot of parents and grandparents I talk to is afraid that, you know, their kid is going to end up getting hurt or worse from drinking, and they're going to hurt or kill someone else. And a lot of them are afraid that, you know, especially if the child is a minor, that they was going to be in trouble for it, that, you know, they was going to be responsible for it. And that's some of the fears that we deal with. I think when you're a parent or grandparent, and also I think, I have, a sponsor Ree that, she's dealing with DHS because, you know, the alcoholism in the home, their children were taken away. And so they have all these court issues and we even get some in that talk about abuse, you know. And so we don't try to tell people what to do or what they should do. We just share our experience, strength, and hope. But if it's abuse, the first thing they should do is safety. And beyond that, we hope that you come in this program and that you learn the tools that we have and the tools in our program that will help you get to a point where you can make all these decisions for yourself. You know, we're there to give you support and anything else that you might need. Another thing that I had to deal with was the grief, the loss of the childhood, you know, loss of dreams, the disappointment of what could have been, the plans for future. My son was a very, very smart kid, you know, and he was in high school and he was taking trigonometry and all these college courses and everything else. So I had this future lined out for him. He didn't follow my script, you know. I had all this stuff lined out for how I wanted him to be, that I wanted him to get a good job. He wanted he wants to get into robotics, engineering, and all these kind of stuff, but instead he got in with drugs and alcohol, you know, and there's nothing I can do about that. But for me, you know, I can just support him in whatever it is he chooses to do. He's actually got a job now, so I support him in that. You know, it doesn't seem like much, but it's something, you know. And Al-Anon offers not only the hope, the tools, it offers a different perspective, how I look at things, the things that I can do differently, my thinking about how things are. I'm able to look at the other side of the coin, you know, turn it over and look at the other side, and not just my side, and not because I just want things my way, but to be able to look at that. I know when I got in the program, my thinking got clearer, and I found a lot of relief. And for me, peace came to me without having to give up anything except my old ideas, you know. And Al-Anon gave me, you know, the tools and the information to form new ideas, you know, and to find a God of my understanding that I didn't have. We had this, you know, we did I did a program one time on all the tools of the program, and I thought I had them all, and there was like 20 that I had done, you know, in one of my meetings. And while I was sitting in the meeting, I sit there and I could think about 10 more, you know, just people talking. And there's just so much available to us here, so much that there is that we can learn, and how to deal and how to cope, and learn those coping and living skills. I also had a distorted sense of self, values, and reality. You know, it says in our literature that a recovery is facing reality without losing the capacity to love, and to learn compassion, to have compassion for the alcoholic or my son, and to, you know, to allow him to be who he is and me be who I am without it destroying anybody's life, you know. I'm able to look at things differently, and I don't have to take things personally. That was a big thing for me, you know, taking things personal. If I keep the focus on me and no one else, I'm able to deal with the reality much easier. I don't always like it, and it never seems to turn out the way I want it to a lot of times. But, you know, this program has given me all the tools and everything that we need in order to live. I don't think there's one problem that I've ever had in my life that Al-Anon has not had a tool that I could use to help me get through it, especially sponsorship. You know, it was a big tool for me when I lost my husband, and when we had a fire at our home, and, you know, my husband had a stroke, went through throat cancer. I mean, it just seems like life was coming at us every different direction. But, you know, when I didn't have the strength, I got it from you people. Y'all gave me the strength to be able to deal with whatever it was I needed to. And if I felt like, you know, there were times I felt like I just can't go on. I can't continue to go on like this, you know. I've given it everything I've got, and I'm just about done. And then all of a sudden someone would come into my life. Someone would call me and tell me it's something that was going on with them. And aha, you know, all of a sudden I don't have to think about that anymore. I can get busy and focus on trying to help someone else, because that's where my recovery is by helping others. In closing, I'd like to say that alcoholism is an evil and corroding thread that weaves its way through the lives of all who have come in contact with it, whether it be a parent, a grandparent. There are no exceptions. And it takes a lot of patience, perseverance, love, and understanding, the kind that only the people in these rooms have, and where you can find. I mean, I've tried to get it from people from outside the programs, and you know, if you don't have that identification, it just doesn't seem to help near as much. But hopefully, if you have a if you are a parent or a grandparent of an alcoholic, that you will find the same blessing of recovery that was freely so given to me from all of those in the rooms of Al-Anon and all those members in recovery, because each and every one of people, no matter where I go or whatever it is that I'm doing, I have been able to find a solution and to find the answers, even if it's nothing more than just experience from them and the gift of hope, because hope is what keeps me going, and hope has continues to keep this program alive for me. And so with that, I thank you very much for allowing me to share.
Thank you very much, Lisa.